to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 85. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffey, well, he's back home in Las Vegas right now. But I am here in New York getting ready for UFC 205, and I've got two very special guests. We're going to have a European-flavored show here because Chamath Carsandu, Simon Head, better known as the Brit Pack, of course, are here with me talking UFC 205. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
It's been great. It's been a crazy fight week already. It's been a very good food week. We've had some outstanding grub. And
like Hooters?
After the press conference earlier today, I think everyone's pretty amped for the fights on Saturday night. This is going to be, we already knew it was going to be special, but this is going to be off the hook. It's going to be absolutely crazy. New York is buzzing for this. We're buzzing for this. And I'm sure everyone listening to this is going to be buzzing for this as well. It's going to be absolutely outstanding.
I'm buzzing. I'm not sure if it's the MMA or not, but I'm buzzing. All right, Sandu, let's talk about it first. I did want to get just the feeling of the hype. I mean, I know this is one that you personally were looking forward to for a long time. You're here working, but Saturday night you're actually just – You're just going to be chilling, right? Chilling
Absolutely.
In the stands, having a good time.
Yep.
So, obviously you're kind of looking at it from a different perspective, and the fact that you are going to kind of soak it in from the stands.
For sure.
But I just wonder, I mean, I know that you've been talking about this one for a long time. Now that you're here, now that you're on the ground here in New York and we're going through the activities, does it have the hype, the expectation, the buzz that you were hoping for?
Well, first of all, I want to say this is the most fun I've had all week long. I got here last Saturday off, the weekend before fight week kind of kicked off. I was able to acclimatize to the jet lag and bits and pieces, spend time with friends and family in New York. And I was able to kind of really slowly and surely absorb every day as it went along. And, it started off with the digital billboards in Times Square and the massive wraparound billboard just opposite Madison Square Garden. And being such a massive pro wrestling fan that you know I am,
right.
MSG has a very special place in my heart from hosting so many great wrestling moments with the WWE. Of course, a lot of people in the combat sports world know MSG for the famous Muhammad Ali fights and Mike Tyson fights and big boxing fights that have taken place here. And just to be here, knowing that the very first UFC event is about to take place in just around 24 to 48 hours from this time of recording is pretty special to me. And at the start of the year, I had to make a choice. It was either going to be UFC 200 or the New York card. And I hedged my bets on New York. And I have to say, I'm not regretting it one bit. I think things were a little pedestrian maybe yesterday at the Ultimate Media
right.
workout with with the rest of the fighters on the card. Of course, Conor McGregor stole the show by hitting a jump shot in Madison Square Garden, the home of the New York Knicks, no less.
Not the greatest form.
Not the greatest form. He didn't make it first try, one shot, yeah. one take, right? But of course, things at the press conference today just absolutely blew up. Things went from 0 to 100 very, very quickly, and that's all anyone's talking about right now.
So let's say, I guess what we should say, we're at Wolf Tone's Irish Pub. We're at a just kind of a little dive bar right next to our hotel where we're staying. We're not staying at the host hotel because a little too pricey for the MMA junkie budget. We couldn't pull that one off. But I will say this, because, I've done a couple of radio interviews with other places around the country, and they're like, what's the feel like? What's the buzz like? I mean, shit, this is New York. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, you could be the world's biggest event, and it's still going to blend in a little bit, right? I mean, you can't captivate. Like, you go to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, like, you own the town. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
New York, there's still a lot of stuff going on. But I do feel like there's some energy. I mean, heck, the place here, they've got posters about, they're outside talking about their specials. I saw kind of joking earlier about being at Hooters, but that's turned in. There's a Hooters right across the street from Madison Square Garden that has good Wi-Fi, as
Very
it turns
convenient.
Out. So, yeah, so the media has basically all been setting up shop there to file video. But it's funny because I saw, they're advertising, I think it's like $40 a head to come in. You get guaranteed a seat, and then I think you get a free food buffet during the fights, whatever. So, I have seen a lot of signage, a lot of things around here. We are staying pretty close to Madison Square Garden. So, I will say, it's not like it's, taking over the entirety of New York, but I do feel like there is a pretty healthy amount of excitement. Simon, as you've seen it, do you feel that there is at least a little bit of a buzz?
I do. I also think that we've just come off the back of one of the most controversial presidential elections in living memory, possibly the most controversial. That was the only story in town when we hit New York City. Now that's happened, and it's starting to just ebb away a little bit. Obviously, we've got protests happening and all that sort of stuff. But now the story that's beginning to take over is it's the Conor McGregor show. And today's press conference has really lit the fuse. And
yeah.
I think now I think the momentum has started. And I think we've got the weigh-ins tomorrow. And I think once we see Alvarez and McGregor actually facing off on stage at Madison Square Garden, then I think things will start to hit a fever pitch. As you said, we're in an absolutely huge metropolis right here in New York City. Everyone's in a rush to get somewhere and do something. But on Saturday night, the bars will be full.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You guys both referenced the press conference today as kind of setting things off. And I think it's true. I mean, yesterday, first of all, yesterday was long. I mean, we got to talk to damn near every fighter on the card, right? I mean, everybody was there in one form or another.
I think Junkie was the only one that has content on absolutely every single
fight. Oh, dude, we had like four cameras going. It's fantastic. But a really long day, and maybe that's partly why it just seemed like more, I don't want to say monotonous or whatever, but today did seem like the big one where it really kind of set off. But I got to ask, man, Conor McGregor, biggest star in sport right now, no question about it, man. The guy is money. He sells pay-per-views by himself. But, you know, we've talked about this before, but I don't know today, like, I don't want to say the act's getting old, but I feel like I'm starting to watch something on repeat. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I hate to take away from it because the guy gets attention. Everything he's done, it seems like he's had the Midas touch with everything he does. But, like, we knew he was going to be late today. Yes, he was late. You know, then Eddie Alvarez kind of gets off the stage, and good for him, you know, kind of pulling the Nate Diaz. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here and promote the fight when I don't need to. But, I mean, I thought it was kind of funny that Conor walked right over and picked up the other belt. I thought that was pretty brilliant for Eddie to come snatch it back. But I don't know, man. I don't want to say I'm getting tired of it already, but I don't know. I feel like I'm watching something I've already watched before.
Well, sometimes too much of a good thing can be a bad thing. And, you know, we talk about Conor McGregor, you know, being a two-weight world champion and potentially being stripped. But his argument is, well, hang on a second, I'm one of the most active champions. And the reason we've seen so much of Conor McGregor is because he has been active. You know, fighting, you know, four times in a year. Maybe, you know, seeing something like this, a press conference like this, or, you know, media performances from Conor McGregor every 2 or 3 months, maybe he does get a little bit old. Maybe taking 6 months off after, you know, will let everyone kind of build up an appetite for him. For me personally, I'm not over it yet. You know, I'm not really not. I think everything they did today, there was still enough new things they did today. I mean, first of all, the guy's wearing a God knows how much it cost, you know, white Gucci mink coat. Who has ever worn that to a press conference before?
Our own pair, MMA Junkie Pair here, said that coat cost $36,000, I believe.
Wow.
And it still had the price tag on it.
Still had the price
tag.
Yeah,
I'm sure you got the receipt and return it after.
Oh, hell yeah. You know that's right.
But, you know, like, you know, we had the whole thing with the mink coat, and then the steel chair came out, and I know people are like, oh, this has gone WWE all pro wrestling
style. Get the tables.
Get the ladders. Get everything involved, right? But look, I think the real story isn't really maybe McGregor's shtick getting a little bit old. I've actually been really, really fascinated by how Eddie Alvarez has handled himself in these exchanges with Conor McGregor. I don't think McGregor is in Alvarez's head at all. And I think Alvarez has come back with a few bits and pieces, a few zingers of his own, and even a few controversial remarks about McGregor's personal life, which I thought was a bold move to make.
Yeah.
So I think kudos to Alvarez for playing that game with McGregor on the biggest stage here in Madison Square Garden.
I was kind of surprised, and I had the damnedest time trying to get a microphone today. It was a big pain in the ass, to be honest, because I was standing in the back, and I guess the PR person, it was Madison Square Garden PR, because it wasn't a UFC person. I couldn't get the damn microphone. I can't believe nobody followed up with Conor to ask him about, you know, Eddie Alvarez claiming that he's having two kids.
Absolutely.
With two different women.
Yeah.
I would think that, you know, I was trying to get it because I wanted to ask him, like, hey, Conor, right. I mean, do you want to address this? I mean, he's made some pretty strong allegations here. So I was a little bit surprised about that. But it's funny because you said, Sindhu, that Eddie is, you know, that Conor's not in Eddie's head at all. And I think that he has really kind of deflected everything up to this point. But, Simon, I wonder today – I mean, did you feel like maybe things took a little bit of a change? I mean, did Eddie show some frustration or some anger or something that he hasn't shown before? Or do you feel like he was still just as calm and collected? Because I really think that a lot of what Conor McGregor has been able to do, not that he's not a fantastic fighter, but I really feel like he gets in guys' heads and he pisses them off and he gets them emotional. I mean, there's no doubt Aldo wasn't fighting like himself. You know what I mean? Gets guys kind of out of their comfort zone, out of their element. And Eddie has looked phenomenally, like, calm, cool, collected. You know, you're not bothering me at all. But today, I did feel like maybe he was a touch bothered.
I don't know. I mean, go back and look through the photos during the actual flashpoint. Mm-hmm. Alvarez was laughing his head off through most of it. And it wasn't like him sort of putting a brave face on it, but looking a little bit worried. He found it funny. At one point, I can't remember what exchange it was, but McGregor said something, and Alvarez just stood there and applauded him because it was such a good line, right? Alvarez was just living the moment. One very quick thing. A good colleague, Danny Austin from Canada, has just handed me his phone. Conor McGregor's outfit today was a tribute to Mr. Smoke and Joe Frazier. who wore almost an identical get-up way back when he was getting set to face Muhammad Ali in what was now known as the Fight of the Century, so at Madison Square Garden. So although McGregor may not have physically or actually stated it, that is the same get-up as Smoking Joe, which I think is a nice touch.
Yeah.
However, everyone in there is giving it the, you know, I'm dressed as a pimp and all the rest of it. And to be honest, the headline I went with was, you know, McGregor's turned up dressed as a pimp. So,
but did Smoking Joe Frazier have those pants that Connor had on today?
I don't know. They were interesting. They look like 12-year-old pajama bottoms
to me.
Yeah, right. You know what I mean?
I mean, some really nice pajama bottoms, but pajama bottoms nonetheless.
Yeah, Gucci pajama bottoms, Gucci PJs. But honestly, and I've said this on social media, and every time I've said it, I've got shot down by all the Connor fanboys. But I don't think Alvarez is in the least bit bothered. Alvarez has been around the world and fought some of the toughest guys on the planet, and he's not someone who goes through fighters and just knocks them out quick. He goes through wars with people. Mm-hmm. So this is a guy who is as seasoned as they come. That may count against him eventually, and that might count against him on Saturday night. I'm sure we'll talk about who we think might win a bit later on, but in terms of mindset, I think Alvarez has dealt with McGregor better than any fighter we've seen so far. I think he's done a superb job. What he did today was that he turned things up a little bit himself,
right,
just to help promote the fight so that McGregor had a little bit to push back against, and there was a little bit of interaction there. I don't think he was that bothered. I really don't.
You know, I do wonder because I don't want to say it reminds me of it, but I do think that like kind of the way that Ronda Rousey against Holly Holm, like at the weigh-ins, I think was like out of character. Not that this is out of character for Conor McGregor, but of course, he feels the weight of the promotion of everything, and I just wonder, you know, if maybe that's why some of it's a little bit, I don't want to say tired to me or whatever, but like I feel like he's almost trying too hard. Like there's not really a natural rivalry there, so he's kind of creating one, and I don't know. Maybe that's why.
Listen, maybe we're so used to Conor McGregor coming up with these creative zingers, and maybe it's getting to him. Maybe he's always thinking about, you know, some new material, and maybe he hasn't come up with anything so shockingly brand new, hasn't reinvented the wheel, that when he gives us, you know, something that he's already done before, a little dose of the McGregor magic, that it's like, oh, been there, done that, bought the T-shirt.
Yep.
You know, maybe it isn't 10 out of 10 from our standards from what he's done in the past, but it's still good enough. I think it's still going to get clicks and views and replays.
Yeah,
it's going to go viral. And, you know, outside of what he's done just this week with the media opportunities, look at what else he's done. He's got a custom-made Rolls Royce. You know, he just earlier on today released his own emoji app, which I believe from looking on Twitter has become the number one paid app on the Apple App Store, which is just ridiculous. Actually, one of the emojis or Macmojis is him actually throwing the bottle, which is brilliant. That's probably going to make him more money than the fines going to cost him.
That's how he's paying for it. That's how he's paying for it.
That's right hilarious. There. Well, you mentioned earlier, I mean, the kind of WWE correlations or whatever. I know that you are a wrestling fan, but
yeah.
was today the press conference? Is it? I mean, does it border a little? I guess that's the whole thing, is maybe it just felt so much like the Nate Diaz press conference, you know what I mean, where objects were about to be thrown and Dana's got to control them. And I don't know. Does it worry you at all that it's too much? Because you did have, what, Landsberg get up and ask, was that staged? You know what I mean? Like, I just wonder, like, I mean, does it concern you a little bit? Like, dude, let's still try to keep the sanctity of the sport a little bit.
Well, listen, we don't really get this at every press conference.
Right.
You know, Conor McGregor fights maybe 3 or 4 times a year, and this is pretty much what we're going to get. Is it maybe a little bit too much like WWE style? It depends who you're asking and what their kind of point of view and how they absorb an event like this is. At the same time, who owns the UFC now? One of the biggest Hollywood agencies in the world, in WME-IMG. And if anything, they know how to do a Hollywood script.
Yeah, they do. All right, well, let's just talk about it, man. As far as who you think is going to win the fight, how are you guys breaking this down? We'll start with you, Sandu. How are you seeing this fight?
It's not rocket science. I think Conor McGregor's going to do what he always does, good foot movement, bouncing in and out, keep it flowy. I favor the longer, taller, rangier southpaw fighter. I think he'll pick Alvarez apart, precision and power. At some point, he'll land that big left hook that he always seems to do. That'll rock Alvarez. I don't know if it'll be a clean knockout or a TKO, because Alvarez is as tough and durable as they come. He's only been knocked out once, I believe, in his career. But I feel as though that he'll get it done, and he's fighting someone that's got a body type of other fighters he's fought before, and he's very, very much used to that. So I'm picking Conor McGregor by either a knockout or TKO in the first or second round.
Simon, how about you?
I think Eddie Alvarez has got all the tools in his belt to beat Conor McGregor, and it wouldn't surprise me in the least if he did it. However, I'm picking Conor to win. And the reason why I'm picking Conor to win is the inescapable fact that Eddie Alvarez gets hit.
Yep.
Eddie Alvarez walks through stuff to land his own punches, and he gets rocked and he gets hit hard. Conor McGregor hits as hard as anybody at featherweight. At lightweight, I think he probably hits. He's probably one of the hardest hitters at lightweight. Anybody who hasn't seen Conor McGregor operate at lightweight, go back and find his fight on YouTube against Ivan Butchinger. It was his last fight at 155 pounds. He won the Cage Warriors lightweight title at the time, and it was an absolutely spectacular knockout. Just, it was like slow motion the way Butchinger fell. And I think McGregor will probably have to deal with a bit of adversity in the early rounds. I think Alvarez will have some success with his wrestling.
Yeah.
I think Alvarez will look to do what he did against Pettis, close uh-huh. and just wrestle him up a bit for the first round or two. And I think he probably will. But then I think once we get into maybe round three, round four, McGregor will, you know, those shots will start to slow down. McGregor will start to be able to find his openings. He'll land clean. And eventually he'll chop him down, beat him by TKO, third, maybe fourth round.
Interesting. You know, I think you guys are saying a lot of the same things I feel, man. I do think this is a better fight than I think some people were just like, he's going to run through Eddie Alvarez. Those are, you know, the Conor fanboys, I think, as you said earlier. But I do think this is a very competitive fight. But I think, you know, what you said there, Simon, as far as, like, you know, Eddie Alvarez is funny. They call him the real-life Rocky. You know, here he is from Philly. And we know he's got great heart. We know he's got great chin. But, you know, why do you know that about a fighter? Because you've seen him get hit a lot. You know what I mean? It's kind of that backhanded compliment, like, he's got an incredible chin. Like, so you've seen him get hit a whole lot of times is what you're saying. And I think you're right. I think he does get hit. So I'm picking Conor McGregor in this fight as well. It's weird because, you know, you break it down. The wrestling, to me, is very much in Eddie Alvarez's favor. I think he can, you know, kind of nullify a little bit of what Conor does. We've seen, you know, Conor does get taken down fairly easily if someone wants to. I think the clinch work could be there as well. But it's bizarre because even though Conor's moving up in weight, he's going to be the bigger man in there.
What's interesting is this is the first time McGregor is fighting at 155 pounds in almost 4 years. And the last time he did, he became the Cage Warriors, you know, lightweight champion. And the interesting thing here is for perhaps fans who've only seen Conor McGregor fight in the UFC, this actually might be the best version of McGregor we're ever going to see.
So.
You know,
he looked good today.
Yeah,
guy looked good. He looks like, I mean, obviously, you know, he's draped head to toe in a Gucci mink, so we don't know exactly what it looked like, but it looked like he looked good. You know, and he definitely looked healthy, and he definitely looked happy. You know, he looked good. So I'm excited.
But to his credit, Eddie Alvarez looked phenomenal at the open workouts yesterday too, right?
Yeah, fantastic. He really did. All right, so. We're saying that we're all saying, I'm surprised enough, that we're picking Conor McGregor. Meanwhile, Danny Austin is complaining about his glass. Watch, he's going to pour one into the other, find out they're the same size, and then he's going to act, and then he's going to feel like a jackass.
Typical Canadian.
It's going to overflow.
You were complaining about the fact that the beer glasses weren't the same size, and sure enough, now there's like a little bit of extra.
See? He's complaining and he actually had a bigger beard than he thought he had.
Griping, complaining Canadians. That's what I say about Canadians. They're just so rude. That's what I always say about them. All right, so we're all picking Conor McGregor, which is a little surprising. But I haven't even seen our staff picks for MMA Junkie. I'm interested to see how we lay that out. All right, so we're saying that. Now, there comes a big question, right? Conor, to this point, is saying, you're going to have to get an army to come take one of these belts away. Dana is saying, no, dude, you're going to have to give one of them up. I personally have said I don't really have a problem with what the UFC is doing by letting him hang on to this belt so that he can potentially set history. I mean, that's kind of cool. But what I've said all along is what I do have a problem with is on November 13th, one day later, I better hear what the hell's coming next at featherweight, because if Conor's not going, he needs to give up the belt. And no disrespect, I mean, he earned it, but we need an active champion, right? You got Holloway out there that can't even win an interim title because Aldo's the interim champion and doesn't know what he wants to do. I mean, it's just you can't put the division on hold. And I can respect, you know, that they're doing it for now, but I feel like they got to do it. So I'll start with you, Sandu. What happens? Assuming that Conor McGregor makes history on Saturday night, he's got one belt on each shoulder. What the hell happens next?
I think if McGregor wins and he throws up the deuces, he's got the two titles in the air over his shoulder. What he's spoken about consistently during this kind of the promotion for this fight is he just wants the moment. He wants that moment to have the two belts and we can figure everything else out afterwards. I think And I hope that if he wins and he wants to remain at 155, that the UFC does the right thing here for the sanctity of the sport, for more than anything else, and for their brand and for the hardcore fans that like to see fights put together on meritocracy, is to strip him or ask him to relinquish the championship belt, right, so that the featherweight division can move forward. The only kind of asterisk I want to put on that is I keep going back to this idea of WME, IMG, you know, owning the UFC now, and like I just don't know too much about what their plans are, what their thoughts are. And maybe for them, they think, well, you know, we've got Conor McGregor. If we can promote him as a two-weight champion and continue to promote him at these events, will they perform better? Will he get more media? And you know, obviously Ben Folks and Stephen Morocco did a fantastic job recently on a series on MMA Junkie where they had a look at these investor papers. We know it's a fact that they have to hit some of these, you know, accelerated targets to bring in as much revenue as possible. So, you know, if that's one strategy of doing that, to promote the biggest star with two belts over his shoulders, that's an interesting point, right?
It's funny because, you know, I'm sure you guys maybe saw that quote today. I know it's been a busy day, and we're kind of just – but did you see the quote of the Dana White quote saying that he has no faith in Jon Jones and he wouldn't put him in a main event? Maybe WME IMG will, but I wouldn't. So it's just like, that's Dana openly admitting that he may have a difference of opinion. I hadn't thought about what you're saying, Sandu, but that's actually a pretty damn good point, man. If WMIMG says, no, man, let's keep two belts around this kid because it looks good on the poster and we can promote it, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
I was speaking to Mike Bond just an hour ago, and he said, listen, Dana White essentially said that any decisions moving forward, I need to get rubber stamped by WMEIMG. He is no longer the head honcho gets veto decision and everything anymore. It's a whole new world in the UFC right now.
That's crazy. All right, put on your predicting glasses here. What do you see forward looking ahead? If he does set the history on Saturday night, Simon Head, what do you think happens?
Well, I think this fight is really important because it should hit the reset button on both the 155 and 145 pound divisions. Just very quickly on the point that Sandu made about the sellability of McGregor with two belts. It's McGregor. It doesn't matter, right? I don't think it makes a blindest bit of difference. That guy will draw where he's got one belt, two belts, no belts. Makes no difference. He fought Nate Diaz in two non-title fights. No one cared. Mm-hmm. It was still two of the biggest fights ever. The belts are just window dressing, right? So just for that. And for that reason, they absolutely need to take a belt off him, because what you're doing is damaging other areas of your business. It means you can put on less title fights in a year. It means that you've got another weight division full of disenfranchised fighters. And I think that, and people who've heard me talking on this show before will know that I'm very into the sport being a meritocracy and being a legit sport. And the showbiz thing should sit around that rather than being led by it. And I think this is the opportunity now where WMEIMG are in the business of creating stars. That's what they do. But how do these guys become stars? Because they're champions in their chosen field.
Right.
So it makes sense for UFC to create as many champions as they can and invest in them and give them promotion. So by putting too many eggs in one basket, and a guy who could go off and do films or go off and do WWE or just say, I've earned my money, I'm done in maybe 18 months, 2 years' time, you're doing damage elsewhere. It makes no sense to me. So I think they take the... I think what they do, McGregor will get 24 to 48 hours grace where he can parade around and be the two-weight champion, get his picture taken on, you know, in the shadow of the Empire State, get all the shots in Madison Square Garden. He'll get all of that done in like 48 hours, and then maybe on UFC Tonight, the week after, they will then announce that he's going to step down from being a 145-pound champion, and Jose Aldo will fight Max Holloway for the reunified UFC featherweight championship. That might be utopian. That might be me just being pie in the sky. That is exactly what should happen, John Morgan.
That is what should happen. Is there any chance that Conor, you know, comes to the press conference? Let's say he wins. He's got two belts. He comes to the press conference. He looks over at the other side of the dais at either Tyron Woodley or Wonder Boy Thompson, is like, F you, I'm coming to take your shit too.
Well, it all depends. It depends if Floyd Mayweather is sitting cage side. From what I'm seeing on Twitter, that there's a possibility of Floyd Money Mayweather attending his very first UFC event.
Come on.
If you want to throw some more spanner in the works, how about that one?
I'll tell you now, Sandu.
Don't
Floyd
make us talk about this.
Mayweather's not going to fight Conor McGregor.
Because
Floyd Mayweather's going to fight Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao's back. He beat Jesse Vargas to win the World Welterweight title. Mayweather is going to fight Pacquiao again because that will do more money than a Conor McGregor fight.
Christ, man. I don't want people to talk about Mayweather. And blame him.
He brought it up.
It's not going to happen.
Listen, he might be there. If he's there, that'll be a massive news story. And then it'll start speculation and rumor. And who knows? It may not even be an MMA fight. It may be a boxing fight. Who knows, right? Who knows what this big announcement is that McGregor's going to give us after the fight? There's so much intrigue and interest coming into this fight. Not just the fight itself, but the post-fight antics, the post-fight stories. There's so much going on this week.
Do you guys have any guesses? I had some people ask me, and I got to be honest. I had zero idea.
I've got a few.
What his big announcement
I've
is.
Got a few.
Yeah? Is this intel or is this just straight guess?
One of them is a straight guess.
Okay.
And the other one has a little bit behind it.
All right.
The guess is that he's going to be doing either a movie of his life.
Or update of his emojis.
Or it's going to be like an At Home with the Kardashians kind of thing. Right?
Okay.
They're the two. But the other idea, he has been on social media for the last 3 to 4 months alluding to this McGregor training program, and it may be about that. It could just be the official launch of the McGregor plan, and which would be a bit of a letdown if I'm honest. but for him, he's generating buzz, all the rest of it, and then his announcement is that everyone's going to report it anyway, and it's going to make him money, and it's a bit of a boring suggestion that it might be that. I think it might be that.
I think it might be McGregor Promotions. I think he's going to go into business himself, maybe manage fighters, maybe even co-promote events with the UFC in a roundabout sort of way. It might even be a tactic to renegotiate a new deal with them, with WMEIMG. But he's kind of, in a roundabout way, hinted a few times through the Mac Life, some stories, some interviews, and even himself in press conferences in the past that, you know, it's McGregor Inc. or McGregor Promotions.
Right.
And, you know, I think there might be some truth to that.
I did think it was kind of weird today that Dana was, like, not pissed at all.
No, he wasn't.
You know, I mean, I think he was, like, pissed at us that we were asking where Conor was and what's going on and why are you putting up with this again? Like, I mean, the last time out, he was, like, very much
livid.
Conor's got to learn. He's got to have respect for you. He's got to have respect for me. And then today he gets asked, and Dana's like, what? He's not here. No big deal. What's the problem?
Yeah.
That was bizarre, I thought.
Very bizarre. And maybe it goes back to the idea of, you know, maybe this is a new era, you know. When it was Dana and the Fertitta brothers, it was like they had their fingerprint on absolutely everything, you know, and it was all under their control. And it was, maybe it was an ego trip, a power trip of, you know, doing things how they want to be, what they want it to be done. And now all of a sudden it's WMEIMG, and they're like, hey, it's okay, Dana, let McGregor be 30 minutes late for a press conference. Don't you worry about it. Maybe it's just Dana just putting, you know, his foot off the gas a little bit, saying, hey, you know what? If it happens, it happens. I'm not going to, you know, lose any more hair, you know, thinking about stuff like that anymore.
I can see that. He's just like, dude, what's the point in even getting upset about it? Like, I already know I've got an $18 million gate on Saturday night. I already know I'm going to, you know, probably break 2 million pay-per-view buys or somewhere around there. I mean, it's going to be big, so maybe just let it go.
Yeah,
let it go.
These accelerated targets, I think he's like, I don't want to upset any of my big stars, like McGregor. You know, they need McGregor rousing the Diaz brothers, and maybe the return of GSP, hopefully, if they get that figured out, if they want to keep producing these big blockbuster pay-per-views over the course of the next 6 to 18 months.
Yep.
Right?
Let's talk about the co-main event. Tyron Woodley, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Very excited for this fight. Of course, all the talk is about the main event. Anytime Conor's fighting, it's going to be that. But I'm really excited for this. And I got to be honest, I have no idea in hell who's going to win this fight. To me, this is such a damn coin flip. I mean, Tyron Woodley has shown, of course, that he has the power to knock out anybody early on. He's got fantastic wrestling, of course. But Wonderboy, man, how fun has it been to just watch him rise up the ranks? Because I remember clear as daylight when he first came into the UFC and you know, scored that highlight reel knockout in his first fight. And I'm like, well, this kid's fun, but, I mean, how far is a karate guy going to go? You know what I mean? But this kid sure is fun. But, man, he has really turned into a complete mixed martial artist, proved himself as a deserving number one contender, and I got no idea how this fight's going to play out. Simon, are you feeling strongly one way or the other?
Yeah, I am. I think Tyron versus Wonderboy is basically, you've got a prodigious athlete against a pure martial artist. And it's a real clash of styles. I mean, I think the fight will be determined by range. And whoever controls that range wins the fight.
Sure.
Tyron Woodley needs to get up close and personal with Stephen Wonderboy Thompson and get his hands on him, whether it be to take him down or whether it be to land something powerful when he strikes. Wonderboy Thompson can stay on the outside and pick him apart and catch him on the way in as well.
Yep.
I'm going with technique over power in this one. I'm going with Wonderboy Thompson to win it by knockout. We haven't seen Wonderboy get hit really badly. I mean, he got dropped by... did Ellenberger drop him briefly?
Yeah,
but other than that, we've not seen him in any real trouble.
Yeah, he hurt him.
But we have seen Tyron Woodley get knocked out very bad in quite brutal fashion
by
Nate Marquardt back in Strikeforce. And I just think back to that, and that is always a possibility. And I think Wonderboy will be very patient. And I think if Wonderboy is just on his guard in the first round in particular, Woodley is all fast twitch. He's all fast twitch. I think you get him into the middle of the second round, into the third round, I think the fight, the whole complexion of the fight transforms.
Mm-hmm.
And Wonderboy will be very much in the ascendancy at that point. Also, there's a possibility that he can just catch Woodley walking in. If Woodley gets there, though, flip that coin.
I know, right?
And then it's in his wheelhouse. It could go either way, as you said. I'm picking Wonderboy by knockout.
Sindhu, how about you? Because, as I said, to me, man, you laid out the scenarios perfect, Simon, and that's what I think is so intriguing. It's just such a clash of styles, and I feel like both could potentially work. Are you feeling strongly one way or the other?
I'm not. I'm like you, John. I'm not feeling like the way Simon does, and because of all the different variables involved on the table. The only thing I want to add to what Simon just did, and it was a great breakdown there, is just it's about cardio for me. I always look at Tyron Woodley as this big, muscular dude, and I think, of course, in the first couple of rounds, that's where he's going to probably, you know, make the money and you know, get the job done. But you start to go into those third, fourth, fifth rounds, and I really do favor Wonderboy, and I favor his conditioning and his ability to kind of stay on the outside and pick Tyron apart. And until a point where maybe Tyron's hands get a little bit heavy, he drops them, and then bang, here comes Wonderboy with a flying kick or something, right? But I still think Tyron Woodley's got the power to just land that one brutal heavy punch in the first or second round, you know, clip him like he clipped Robbie Lawler, finish him on the ground, and that's it. That's, you know, Bob's your uncle, or Fanny's your aunt, like you say in the UK, you know.
Tyron is coming in as the underdog in that. I think he feels, I don't know if it's I think he feels like the world hates him, to be honest with you. I think it feels like nobody is in his side, and maybe they're not. It doesn't seem like he gets respect. It feels like he's an underdog every time he steps in there.
He's trying real hard as well. Yesterday at the NBA court at the Knicks, he was trying to almost be a cheerleader for himself, and he's asking the fans to cheer for him, and they're screaming Wonderboy at him. And today it's just like maybe there was a bit of a kind of shift in that where he's just like, yeah, carry on booing me. Make a beat out of the boos that you're giving me.
Yeah.
I just think, listen, Tyron, just let it go. Like, if they're going to boo you, they're going to boo you. Maybe embrace that kind of heel role that, you know, we've spoken about some other fighters take, you know, in the past, because, you know, everybody wants a good guy, everyone wants a bad guy. That's what makes a great Hollywood story. That's what sells tickets. And, you know, you don't want any fans to be, you know, completely indifferent about you. You either want them to hate you or you want them to love you, because that's what's going to sell tickets, right? And if he wants to take this, you know, embrace this kind of villainous role, even though it's been put on him because of the way fans treat him, and he gets past a Wonder Boy, then maybe a GSP around the corner would be the perfect foil for a good guy, bad guy scenario. I don't know. Maybe that's too Hollywood. Maybe that's too WWE.
Could be good. No, I mean, can you imagine, right, though, that run happened for him? That'd be amazing.
It would. I mean, the thing I'd say about Tyron is he, if you actually look at the guy and you just look through the history of his career and inside and outside the cage, he's an exemplary athlete. He conducts himself with class whenever I've seen him.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff he's done outside of fighting, being a real advocate after the whole Ferguson shootings and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, this is a stand-up individual. Wonderboy Thompson is like, I don't know whether you have Milky Bars in America. We have them back home in England. If any British fans listen to this, the Milky Bar Kid.
Yep.
He's like the grown-up Milky Bar Kid. And he's just like a proper sort of white bread, you know, just the absolutely butter wouldn't melt in his mouth.
Right.
Whiter than white. just, you know, nothing wrong with him, you know, almost the halo on, above his head, you know. And the thing that turned it round.
I'm being shown the
Milky
Bar
kid. The Milky Bar kid is tough and strong. The Milky Bar kid just can't go wrong. That's what he's saying, right? And I think the thing that really turned the fans against Woodley was that split screen interview after Woodley beat Robbie Lawler,
right?
Where we had the most respectful call out of all time on live television from Wonderboy Thompson. It was like, Oliver, please, sir, can I have a title shot? And it was, and apparently they'd discussed this before the fight. And it was like, you know, if I win, we'll do this. And he said, you know, maybe we can do this now. And Tyron just flipped the script on him and went, nah, I want to fight Nick Diaz. I want to fight Georges St-Pierre.
That was great.
And I think that is literally the only thing that anyone's got to really hit Tyron Woodley with.
And you know what, who could blame him? And this is maybe, you know, why things have changed in the UFC now. You know, when you've got guys like Conor McGregor jumping weight classes, looking for the money fights, and you've got other champions who are coming in thinking, well, am I going to be the Demetrius Johnson of my division? Or, and just kind of like, carry on winning, right?
But he just won the belt. It was like an hour and a half after he won the title.
Yeah.
And now he wants super fights. It's like, well, earn your keep first.
Well,
and that's why the fans bit back, and that's why he's getting booed.
I felt a bit sorry for him, though, because he had a decent point. You know, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson did specifically say, I'd prefer to fight Robbie Lawler.
I know, that was great. You can fight him now, then.
Yeah, go for it. There you go. You want to fight him, go fight him.
That was fantastic. Yeah, I feel bad for him. I don't know why it doesn't seem like he gets the respect he deserves. It's kind of the way that kind of played out is kind of similar to what's going on with Michael Bisping right now, where I don't think Michael Bisping, A, was really in the wrong to fight Dan Henderson. I mean, as he said, the UFC came to me. I didn't come to them.
Right.
They asked me, and I was like, hell yeah, I'll take that fight. And then, you know, he's like, oh, I'll take the GSP fight. It's like, oh, well, GSP won't fight, but we got Jacare. It's like, well, no, I mean, now it's too close, and I've got some other stuff going on. And
he said he was off the GSP.
Pooping all over him. That fight was going to happen, dude. GSP, no. GSP was not in Vegas to play blackjack, man.
Nah.
You know what I mean? That fight was going to happen at UFC 206.
Yeah.
So, interesting. Let's talk about the final title fight. Joanna champion and Carolina contender, is that where we're going?
Carolina Kowalkiewicz. Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And I'm going to be in the arena watching it live, but I cannot wait to get home. I watched the replay just so I could see how Mike Goldberg handled that.
He might just combust at cage side. He just bit his little puff of smoke. And it'd be Rogan sitting there with like soot all over him going,
I don't know. What do you guys make of, you know, both of their levels? So first off, Joanna is an amazing fighter. I think all of us agree, man. She is so much fun to watch. But I was a little bit surprised that she changed things up, went to American Top Team. I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, how could going to a world-class facility like that be bad? But it is weird when, like, everything's going good and you, like, change things up. You know, it's like normally you wait for something to go wrong to have a fresh start. You know, why fix something that ain't broken, right? So I thought that was a little bit bizarre. But, I mean, I can't imagine going to ATT is a bad thing for her. But it just did seem weird to me to kind of reinvent the wheel, so to speak, and so close to a big fight. So that's a little bit surprising. Then the other thing to me is Carolina. I don't know what to make of her. I mean, she's definitely skilled. I think she's undefeated for a reason. She's definitely earned her spot there. You know, she had a big win last time out to kind of earn her spot there. But in my head, I think she's physically overmatched. I think this is a bad fight for her. But I will say, I like the way she carries herself, man. She's not afraid. She's getting right up there in Joanna's face and barking some Polish at her and whatever else. I guess, the way she's handling it. I mean, it definitely doesn't seem like, you know, every now and then you get those fighters that kind of know they're probably in a bad spot, and they kind of give you the, I'm happy to be here, and, you know, this is great. It doesn't feel that way for her. I do kind of like it, but at the end of the day, I do think Joanna's probably just too much for her.
Yeah, I think, and me and Sandy spoke about this earlier in the week, and I think Joanna is probably third on my pound-for-pound list behind Demetrius Johnson and John Jones.
Oh, wow. Overall pound-for-pound.
Yeah.
Pound.
Yeah.
Wow.
You show me another UFC world champion who fights with the ferocity that she does, who treats opponents in the cage the way that she does, who is as dominant in her weight class as she is, I think there's a really strong argument that she could be number three in that pound-for-pound list.
It's interesting because so we do have a women's pound-for-pound rankings at MMA Junkie. It's not published just because we need our web designer to implement that. We've been waiting on it for a while. We'll get it done. But we do keep up with it every single week just so that we have it ready once our web designer launches out. Now, we did decide very early on once we started with these rankings that we were always going to keep men and women separate. Like, our bosses at USA Today really wanted us to put, like, Ronda in the men's rankings and stuff like that. And we're just like, listen, pound for pound is already a ridiculous enough argument as it is. You know, oh, if everything was equal in all sizes, like, how the hell do you figure that out? I was like, but to add women in there, too, and to say, well, it's a women and man, it's all the same. So we do keep them separate. I say all that to say we have Joanna as the number one pound for pound woman in the world right now, even ahead of Chris Cyborg. No offense to Chris Cyborg. Chris Cyborg is incredible. Dominant, love watching her fight, a superstar. But as you said, you know, beating the quality of women and beating the depth of women, whereas, you know, Cyborg right now is facing people we've never heard of, people that are moving up from, you know, not their weight class. It'd be like if Joanna was fighting, you know, atom weights every time. So we've got her as our number one woman in the world.
Well, why not? You know, I mean, based off her last performance against Claudia Gadella, that for me is one of the best performances of the year. It's one of the best fights of the year. I've watched it a few times, and I've been fortunate to kind of seen the kind of progression of Joanna Janjicic from her days, you know, in Cage Warriors coming up in the European circuit until she got signed to the UFC.
Yeah.
And it's been great to kind of almost have a little relationship with her throughout the years and seeing her kind of make the progression up the ranks until she became the UFC champion. And going back to your point about, you know, moving over to AT&T, I think that's only going to help her. I suppose at this stage of her career, she knows how to strike. She knows her Muay Thai. She knows how to kick and punch.
Yeah.
And perhaps the only thing she needs to kind of polish up is that takedown defense, the clinch work, and the wrestling. And you're going to get that at AT&T, right?
Right.
You're definitely going to get that in spades. So if you can handle her striking, I'm sure she'll still be training, you know, with a few coaches from Poland who maybe be coming over and helping her out with bits and pieces. I think she'll be fine. Although having said that, she looked phenomenal at the open workouts on Wednesday of fight week, but so did Karolina Kowalkiewicz. That's the best I've seen her look physically. Her hand speed was phenomenal. I think she's really going to give Joanna a fight. And I suppose the other kind of unknown here is the fact that this is almost like a Polish civil war.
Right.
So will the fact that Joanna's fighting one of her own countrywomen, and there is that history that they fought before in the past, and, you know, there's been a bit of an angle here where she's been almost vilified for leaving Poland, leaving her manager, leaving her camp to go to America, whereas Karolina Kowalkiewicz, she stayed at home, right? She stayed with who she's been training with for many, many years, her Polish crew, her Polish camp.
Representing
right?
people.
Will that play a factor into how they actually square off tomorrow and how they fight on fight night? Will the mind game still play a factor in the fight? I don't know, but it's an intriguing, fascinating story heading into this fight. I actually can't wait. I mean, this is a fight that I'm so looking forward to. It's probably the fight I'm looking forward to most outside of the main event.
That's interesting. So I was going to ask you about the remaining three fights on the main card. All right, Yoel Romero versus Chris Weidman, Cowboy Cerrone versus Kelvin Gastelum, and Raquel Pennington versus Miesha Tate. Out of those three fights, I mean, the one that obviously has the biggest implications in moving forward is Yoel Romero versus Chris Weidman. But out of those three, is that the one you're looking forward to the most, or is there one of those three that stands out that you're like, that's the one I can't wait to see?
Well, I think the Weidman-Romero fight, I think, has the most riding on it, as you say. I think Raquel Pennington versus Miesha Tate is a sleeper for fight of the night. I really do. I think Raquel Pennington is very durable. She throws high volume. Mm-hmm. And this is a big, big chance. You beat Miesha Tate, you're elite at 135 pounds. For Miesha, it's a crossroads fight. She's just lost her belt. She's got any chance of getting back in there again. It took her long enough to get the chance in the first place. She's got any hope of getting back in there again. She's got to deal with Raquel Pennington pretty decisively. I think this could be an absolute stormer of a fight. I really do. I think it'd be a cracking fight. I'm picking Tate to win it.
Right.
But I think from a crowd entertainment point of view, I think it's the perfect fight to tee off that pay-per-view card, you know. I think it'd be a great fight.
It's funny, you know, I was talking with Mike Bond earlier, and he said he had seen an interview where Raquel Pennington's camp basically said their strategy is to punch Miesha in the nose early and then go from there. And, God, man, it was not that long ago that nose was busted up, and I do wonder, I mean, it's not a super quick turnaround, but it ain't a long time. I mean, UFC 200 was not that long ago. I mean, is that a concern for you, Sandu, that she could get busted up?
Perhaps. I mean, we saw what happened with Rory McDonald, and he's now taking an extended time out of the game before he makes a return to get his situation sorted. Maybe it's the New York factor. Maybe the UFC gave Misha Tate the phone calls. Hey, it's MSG. It's New York City. It's a Conor McGregor fight. Are you in? How do you say no to that?
Right.
Right? So maybe she is rushing it. We don't know, but we'll find out on Saturday night, and we'll see if Pennington does, you know, aim for that nose. But going back to your point earlier, it is still the Weidman-Romero fight for me, and maybe it's because it's got the most implications for the British champion, Michael Bisping.
Yeah.
Because if Weidman wins, I think the airways and the airline and the pathway is all clear.
Yeah.
You know, right? For Weidman to get that correct if he wins. But then you see Romero, again, fascinating storyline. This guy comes off his suspension. I see his Instagram earlier on today. The guy is looking absolutely in probably the best condition I've ever seen him, coming just a day before he's supposed to weigh in. So, and he'll get an extra 12 hours or so to actually rehydrate for the first time. Will that play a factor? We've always thought about his conditioning and, you know, the weight cut and so forth. And fascinating fight. I'm a sucker for a walkout. I really am, especially a good song. Tom Petty, Won't Back Down, Chris Weidman in New York City, MSG. That's going to give me goosebumps. Just being in the arena to see him walk out, having seen him just campaign for so many years with Lorenzo and the Frank and Fratia brothers, and just going to get this whole New York MMA situation legalized. He's such an integral part of that. And the fact that he actually had to go back to Lorenzo, right, almost round the back door
to get the whole thing
sorted
out.
To get the whole thing done in the first place. So that's another fascinating storyline heading into this fight. I'm really looking forward to that fight from a stylistic standpoint, from a storyline standpoint, and also just from the fact that, you know, seeing the walkout would be pretty amazing.
It was. We actually spoke to Bisping earlier tonight. He said he basically expects Weidman to win the fight.
He said he wanted Weidman to
win. Oh, you're right. He said he wanted Weidman to win.
He said he wants Weidman to win. Because I asked him who he wants to fight. If he could choose anyone, he said Weidman. And I said, why? And his reply was, because he's a tit.
Yeah.
That was the response, right?
Typical British insult there, John.
Yeah, but he then went on and explained that actually he really has a lot of respect for Weidman and his team, but he's the guy who wants to fight. I think it's very interesting, this.
I think he said he wanted to fight Weidman, but he thinks Romero
will win
the fight.
He thinks Romero
will
win the fight.
Because it's a three-round fight, not a five-round fight.
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
I think it's a tough fight to pick. I really do think. If Weidman's wrestling is good enough to keep it standing, then we could find ourselves with having a real slugfest on our hands. Because Romero doesn't throw anything but spectacular power shots.
Right.
And Weidman's got some power in his hands as well. So it could be a real knockdown, drag-out affair.
Does Romero look any better without the tainted supplements? Does he look like a different fighter?
He's a soldier of God. Anything could happen.
He just prays to God, and you know he gets the job done, apparently.
Prayers and vitamins, that's all you need, baby. Yeah. That's all you need. All right, well, let's do this. My frosty beverage is sitting here empty, and the rest of these horrible people around us were not willing to keep these things freshened up. So that's the main card. But I want to ask one question real quick, just outside of 205, and get your guys' take on it. We found out this week that John Jones suspended for 1 year. What did you think? Did you guys know? I said from the beginning, as soon as I heard what it was, that it was, you know, a sex pill, you know, that basically had banned ingredients in it, not tainted. It's manufactured that way with banned ingredients in it. I said from the beginning it was going to be 1 year. It is going to be 1 year. Now, there's still the Nevada to deal with. But I don't know. What did you guys hear from your side? I feel like I've seen both sides. I feel like I've seen some people say, like, oh, my God, this is a horrible punishment. And other people saying this isn't enough. Or where did you guys fall on it?
I'm of the view that unless the substance was proved to be contaminated, i.e. you took something in good faith as a supplement and it turned out to have something in it that wasn't supposed to be in it,
right,
then you've got grounds for a reduced sentence, right? For me, you should have got 2 years, a year for taking it and a year for stupidity, right? I don't think stupidity is a defense. And it seems that stupidity as a defense has worked for him.
Yeah.
And all I can say is he's got a damn good legal team. Because I don't understand.
I don't think
2 years
would have been ridiculous. I think 1 year is fair, but I don't think 2 years would have been ridiculous.
No, and as you said, if you ingest we spoke to Stipe Miocic yesterday. Was it yesterday or today?
It was today. How crazy this week is.
It's been a long week. We were fortunate enough to sit down and have lunch with Stipe today. And we asked him about how he goes about stuff. That man is meticulous.
Yeah.
He blows up Jeff Nowitzki's phone all the time. And he knows exactly what he's taking, when he's taking it. He keeps the batch numbers. He keeps the packaging. He leaves a spare one in the bottom or whatever.
Exactly
sends it off.
What you need to do. He does exactly what you're supposed to do.
He's a professional.
Yes.
John Jones needs to be more of a professional. He was stupid, and I think he's got away with it.
I hope it's a cautionary tale. What did you think, Sandu?
I mean, I would have been comfortable if he had gotten 2 years. I think he's a very lucky boy to get a year. The fact that he can be fighting or just training for his next fight in the next 3 or 4 months, I think he's very, very fortunate to be in the situation that he's in. You're not going to lose too much, you know, being away from the fight game for about a year or year and change. Having said that, though, like you said, John, the Nevada State Athletic Commission, that hearing is still around the corner. And they've been known to hand out 5-year suspensions for marijuana to Nick Diaz. Right? So we just don't know. This is not the end of the John Jones saga in terms of what potential ramifications are around the corner given what he's already had to kind of go through. Yeah. So fine, fair enough. USADA gave him a year. Now, if NCAC say, yeah, we're going to agree to that and give him 1 year, then fine. But if they say we're going to give him 2 years, I ain't got a problem with that.
I'm telling you, man. I like John, man, and I think you can make the argument that he's the greatest of all time, dude. He's definitely one of the greatest ever. I mean, at worst, second or third best ever already.
What was Dana's quote this week? One of the greatest of all time, one of the biggest screw-ups of all time?
Yeah, it's just a damn shame. I hope it's a cautionary tale because, to me, and you said it right, Simon, it's stupidity, man. You can't be careless like that and just put, you know, just take something and not worry about it. Somebody just gives you a pill, this could cost you millions of dollars, man. Don't just take it and assume it's going to be
money
okay.
And legacy.
Yes.
I mean, how many fans maybe view John Jones in a different light now? How many fans view Anderson Silva in a different light now? You know, you can have a great career, but when you've got that asterisk on your resume, it changes things.
It does. I do want to say one thing. You mentioned marijuana in Nevada. This election day, we did pass full...
Some good news in America.
Full marijuana, recreational marijuana, maybe in 2018, maybe in 2017, depending on how fast they can get it. But Las Vegas, Nevada will have full recreational marijuana, which will surely, I'm sure, change things for the international traveling media when they come to town for UFC events moving forward. But I did have some people ask me, you know, what will that do as far as, like, you know, for the NSAC? And it won't do anything. It's just like alcohol. You know what I mean? Alcohol is fully legal, but that doesn't mean you can have it in your body on fight night. So I think just to clarify, because I think there was some people that had some confusion. Just because it's legal in the state doesn't mean that you can do it there.
Question there for you, John. Does that perhaps, now that it's legal in Nevada, will that have any impact in regards to the medical marijuana license card?
We'll see. I mean, you shouldn't have to. Well, you shouldn't need it anymore because if it's full recreational, anybody can buy it, is my understanding. So I don't think you need the medical card anymore.
No, in terms of, do you think that could be something that Nick Diaz could provide in regards to the application for a fighter's license in Nevada? That's what
they
I
mean. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They can definitely try.
Will that not help now that it's legal?
They can
do you
definitely
think?
Try. I don't know. I don't think so because I don't think that'll. I still don't think they'll want the limits above it on fight night. You know what I mean? Just because the argument against it is, you know, an impaired fighter, and you don't want an impaired fighter when it comes to fighter safety. So. All right. Well, guys, always a pleasure to talk to you. Let's freshen up these beverages real quick since everyone else sitting around us has been
the absolute worst service ever.
Unattentive to our needs.
Unbelievable. I mean, you know, if that was me on the other side of the table, I'd be just buying rounds for everybody and, you know, making sure that everyone's, you know, topped up. But not the case with Mike Bond, Abby Saban, Per Hellstrom, and a Canadian and Danny Austin. Just everyone just on their phones and in their laptops and worried about their own beverages. Not a care in the world for the Brit Pack and John Morgan.
All right, we'll handle that. I don't have any audio to play, so just listen to the best theme song in all of the MMA podcasts. Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. After the Brit Pack joined, we have let them carry on in favor of our good friends from the Great White North. The young Mike Bond is here. Danny Austin is here as well. We've got our Canadian contingent. Gentlemen, the Brit Pack is excited about UFC 205. They're feeling the buzz. You and I have been grinding, Mike, the last couple of days. Danny, I know you've been caught up and already done another podcast tonight as well. I mean, you're busy. What do you think, man? Are you feeling the hype of UFC 205?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's here. I think that we're certainly seeing fight fans are getting ramped up, and you know, this card is so deep that I often make an effort, as you know from seeing me on Twitter, to bust down the reporters who talk nonstop about how excited they are for the fights and all that. But This card's like untouchable. I mean, I was at media day yesterday, and it was great because every time the line was too long to talk to someone, there was actually
somebody you wanted to talk to.
There was someone else I wanted to talk to. I mean, there were important, great fighters who had interesting things to say. So I'm all in on this card. I'm sure you guys talked about it earlier. I don't know that I've had people come up to me in bars and start talking about the UFC. I mean, this doesn't have the feeling you get around the MGM Grand
right.
for a major
fight.
Well,
that's what I said. I think it's hard because I've had people talking to me like, what does it feel like on the Grand? It's like, dude, it's still New York, bro. You know what I mean? Like, you can have a pretty amazing event, and it's still going to get lost in the shuffle of millions of people with millions of different things to do.
In New York, you're lucky if you dominate one night.
Right.
The idea that they were going to come in, and this is why it's ridiculous for me to even be like, oh, well, they haven't. No. On election week, you're not dominating five nights of the news cycle getting people hyped up. There are bigger things going on. We're in the center of the universe, and this is the fight that the UFC is going to have in this market. They're not going to be able to do cards this big every time.
Yep.
But I think that they ultimately, like, they put a card together that feels like a home run right off the bat. And, I mean, I'm starting to get hype. It took me a minute. Donald Trump's the president. I'm not, like, super excited about the world, but a couple days later, no, I saw it. I felt it today. I think it's happening, and I think that, like, if you're a guy like the three of us and you like fights, this card is the opposite of UFC 200. This isn't just big names, man. This is good fights. And that's what I love. And I think that I hope that the UFC learned its lesson from UFC 200, where it just put the biggest names it could get on and didn't really think about how it was going to play out.
Is there too many good fights on this card? I look at this event, and, like, I don't want to be the guy. You know, we're not going to sit here and spend more than, like, a minute talking about this because it doesn't need it. But look at this card. Every single matchup, I could legit see going to a decision. Like, in some
That's
sort
interesting,
of
fight. That's interesting because, yeah, you're talking
about
when you know,
like, it's people, a lot people of talk very, about, very evenly you know, match fights.
Like strike force, you know, you'd have, like, mismatched fights. You're like, it was very easy to look at a fight card and sell everybody that was going to win.
Yeah.
But you would tune in and get, like, six first-round knockouts or something. You're like, hell yeah, I had a great time. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that, but you're right. I mean, when you're talking about this high level of fights and this high level of fighters, you're right. You could have a shitload of decisions, and all of a sudden you're going, like, I don't know if is this great or not.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure there'll be good quality fights, but yeah, I could see just a lot of very evenly matched competitive fights. I could see, you know, three championship fights. If, you know, even two of those go the distance, we're going to be in for a long night.
Night with 15 rounds.
Yeah, the pay-per-view has already extended an hour window longer. It's a six-fight pay-per-views, you know, which we usually just get five.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not worth discussing too much because I think, you know, we'll have some fights mixed in there. I'm sure we'll get some finishes, but I could see it going that way. I mean, maybe it would have been a good idea to throw a squash match in there every
now and
then.
I will say, though, that it is worth discussing a little bit because if you're a guy like Jeremy Stephens, normally when you get this shine from being on a Conor McGregor card, part of the, you know, the reward is you don't really get talked about in the lead-up, but if you have a big win,
yeah,
you get the push. That
right.
comes
he
can from
knock
the,
out Frankie Edgar, and no one's going to be talking about
no
it.
And no one's
going to
be talking
still.
About it. So no, it actually does Pretty matter in terms of, and I hate to say it, but in terms of the narrative, there being too many good fights is an interesting question.
It's a good question too because you know, you mentioned it for Stevens and Edgar. Obviously, that's a huge fight. It's crazy because the way the prelims closes with Edgar and Stevens and with Johnson and Nurmagomedov, two huge fights in their divisions that are both trying to figure out what the hell Conor McGregor is going to do. You know, the winners of both those fights are going to be sitting around. And you mentioned it, the push that you would want to get, because at 145 it's a little bit different. I mean, I fully expect Conor, if he wins, to give up that belt. I fully do. I think something's got to be done. But let's say he, you know, there's you got Aldo figuring out what he's – I mean, it's kind of a different situation. But at 155, say Nurmagomedov wins. Let's say he just comes out and smokes Michael Johnson, has, like, a scintillating performance, right? But, man, Tony Ferguson got all the shine of being in a main event just 7 days earlier, and I think a lot of people after that were like, yep, that's your number one contender right there, where Nurmagomedov should be. But you're right. I mean, he could go out there and have a great performance, and then seven fights later – Nobody's even talking about it.
And don't forget about that guy, Nathan Diaz. He could swing in there, too, as well. He is, you know, the outlier there, regardless of who wins that. He has serious beef, serious history with Eddie Alvarez. They do not like each other. They almost got in a fight down in that Mexico City card when Alvarez beat Gilbert Melendez.
Right.
So there's some history there. And then, obviously, you know, Connor and Nate doesn't really need to be discussed. We know their history as well. So it wouldn't shock me if he slid in there as well ahead of both those guys.
Mike, is Donald Trump going to be at the fights? You were the one that pointed this out earlier. Is he going to be
there? Dana did that town hall hour-long sit-down with Jim Rome today for SiriusXM, and he said he was, you know, talking to Trump or whatever, and Trump said if he wins the election, he will be at UFC 205. So,
all right, now, first of all,
who knows?
That seems like an incredible security risk.
Yes.
Because I think there's a lot of people that aren't really big Donald Trump fans. I think New York was, like, hugely Clinton in the voting.
Yeah, I've been covering this stuff all week.
Yeah, right? You became a political reporter this week.
Yeah, man, no. It's turns out that when you're with a Canadian media company that's making a lot of cuts, they send the UFC reporter to...
Hey, MMA guy, are you cool with this presidential election?
Yeah.
You know, it's the same stuff, right? Basically.
But no, I mean, this is a Democrat city. I mean, yeah. You put Donald Trump
On the screen, wow!
People are going to throw bottles. They're going to throw cans. I mean, they're mad at this guy.
All right, yeah. I don't want to get like political or anything.
No,
but,
of course not. I'm just saying.
It would be kind of cool, right, for the president-elect, whether or not you agree that he needs to be president-elect.
It would
kind of be cool for the president-elect to be at the UFC, right?
Are you going to make me say that it's cool? Like, yeah,
it would be pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it would be cool.
I mean, you know,
it would be cool.
A sport that not that long ago was like, you know, just pissed on in the mainstream, like for the president.
And we know Donald Trump is being, you know, a UFC supporter, all that stuff. How long before a UFC fighter, UFC champion gets brought to the White House?
Oh, see?
Gets the White House tour.
I like where you're going with this.
Maybe one day. We'll see.
You're not wrong, though, right?
Right?
I mean, yeah.
Interesting. All right, Dan, I wanted to ask you earlier. We were talking about the press conference today. And, I haven't heard your opinion on it yet, but it sounded like you had one. So I did want to hear about it because interesting. I mean, everybody's talking about Conor as they should be, of course. It's the Conor show anytime he fights, and he took over just like he always does. I'll admit that, I don't know, for whatever reason, it felt a little stale today. I'm not sure why, but you had a different take. I think you said you weren't really disappointed so much in the fighters. You were disappointed in the media.
Yeah, I am. And, I mean, as both of you guys know, there are faces that show up at every UFC event in Vegas. I don't know if I should drop their names, so I'm not necessarily going to. But there are guys from all over the U.S. Who are working for smaller outlets, and you can argue that they're trying to piggyback on the growth and success of the sport. But they're still spending their own money and they're doing it. And I think that they've been there, and particularly over the last year, at pretty much every event. And I'm friends with those guys, and I stay at Hooters with those guys, which is the cheap place to stay. And they were declined. They did not get credentials for this event. And I think there are good reporters who would take this seriously who were declined. And I had to sit there and listen to a supposed reporter call Conor McGregor his bro. That is unacceptable to me. And I think there are so many talented voices in MMA media that I just get defensive as a media member because I know that people think that's stupid. And that's not most of us. And that guy makes me look stupid. He makes you look stupid. He makes all of us look stupid. You said it earlier. I was listening. How did no one follow up on Eddie Alvarez saying, if untrue or if true, a wildly inappropriate thing about Conor McGregor impregnating another woman?
That's not his girlfriend.
Who's not his girlfriend. How did that not come up?
I don't understand how nobody followed up.
There were so many questions that were just left sitting there. Joanna, I don't care about the pound-for-pound thing. I think she's the third best fighter in the world.
Yep.
Forget pound-for-pound because that term brings up different things. She was asked one question the entire time there. Carolina did not get one.
God, she didn't get one, did she?
That press conference humiliated me. I mean, nah, that's too strong. But I was embarrassed. I was sitting there. I have talked to all six of these fighters.
It takes a lot to humiliate
in the last couple months. I didn't really have anything new to ask, so I didn't walk into it tossing my hand up and doing it. But by midway through the press conference, I asked, and then I didn't get the microphone coming to me. And I thought that it's a good thing that Conor and Eddie put on a show that gave highlights for SportsCenter because otherwise that press conference was – I mean, we've got to do better as –
But also at the same time, just to follow up with that, they did multiple interviews after the press conference over. They did a satellite tour. They were on ESPN, all these things. None of those outlets asked follow-up to that question either. So that's something, you know, also to address. And they had a funny little back and forth on SportsCenter. But outside of that, you know, we no one followed up on that whatsoever. But maybe that's something we bring up after the fight. I don't know.
If it's, I may, I don't like mind. I don't mind going in on this really quick. The people who get the follow-up interviews after that press conference, so that fans know, are broadcasting partners almost exclusively.
Yeah,
that is my company is paying thousands and thousands of dollars for me to be here, and I am not getting the opportunity to put my microphone in front of anyone's face at all this week. I do not have a single, and I requested all six of the people fighting in title fights, and they're not giving them to me.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't love how they set it up this week. I mean, they should have had. Just kept the main event out there. I understand you can't. You're not going to bring Connor and A to media day. You're going to have a press conference. I know they like to do fight week press conferences, but like Woodley, Thompson, Janjacek, Carolina, they should have been at the media day. They should have done something where we could have actually had a little more extended time with them because they got completely overshadowed by putting them on the same dais up there with those people.
That's like, a good point, because you knew like right away that.
And yeah, we're writing stories on Vicente. No offense to the likes of Vicente Luque, all these guys, Jim Miller, Thiago Alves. There's more content out there on those guys right now than there is on the people fighting in title fights, on Tyron Woodley, all this. And what, we get a one-minute interview from Megan O'Leary from the open workouts. We get one quote where she asks all, you know, love Megan too, but she asked the same, all six people the exact same three questions.
Right.
And, yeah, we got no depth, nothing interesting, no new compelling angles. If we had, you know, I would have loved to have 15 minutes with Joanna and Carolina to talk about this pull-in angle and, like, yeah, you know, do something a little more in-depth on that, but we didn't get a chance to do any of that stuff.
That's a good point. I think Carolina would probably be a lot more comfortable, too, because, I mean, she speaks English, but it's not, like, great. Like, you can tell, like, she's kind of a little bit scared when she talks, you know what I mean? So I think that's probably one reason people didn't really talk to her much in the press. I didn't realize she didn't get any questions at all, but, that would have been hugely beneficial to have that, because you're right. I mean, Connor's not going to do a media scrum anymore. Like, that's just not going to happen. He's too big. But you're right. Just having the main event, I think, probably would have been the right thing to do.
If I may, I was actually one of the people who, to be totally transparent, in the lead-up to 187, there were a lot of Brazilian reporters showing up at events, and I just knew with the sport growing, there were going to be too many reporters to do the scrums we usually do.
Right.
So I'm partially responsible for this because I requested that the UFC come up with a different setup that didn't involve 50 media people reporting or like crowding into a space where there were only 10 of us. So
it's your
this
fault.
Is not like, and I'm not the only one who did that. I know a couple other people who did. This isn't like, I'm kind of wrong on this.
Careful what you wish for, my friend.
Yeah, exactly.
To quote Dana White.
Interesting. All right, let's talk about it. Edgar versus Stevens. Anybody feeling good about this? I mean, Frankie Edgar, dude is a future UFC Hall of Famer. Dude is just, one, I mean, he's still top notch. He's just one cut
more
below.
Than 6 hours of octagon time, that man.
That's insane.
First six person hours? To cross 6 hours. Unbelievable.
So he's the leader now?
Yeah, he's the leader. Yeah, I think it's like six hours, 2 minutes, and, you know, change.
6 hours in the damn octagon. That's crazy. All right. Meanwhile, Jeremy Stevens. Anybody went through the line out there?
Yeah, who the fuck is that
guy? I figured it was there. Somebody had to take it. I mean, obviously, that guy hits you. What did he say?
Yeah, I can't remember.
He's got a lot of power. He tried to explain it. He's got a lot of power.
He TKOs people. You know, they don't move.
They don't move.
They don't fucking move.
So apparently, they don't fucking move like I move. All right, so what do you guys? You guys got a big feeling on this one? I mean, I feel like Frankie Edgar's a cut above Jeremy Stevens, but damn, Jeremy Stevens is dangerous.
Yeah, definitely, I think. And the size difference during the stare down too. It's crazy. Like Frankie Edgar, both former lightweights, you know, but Jeremy Stevens just seems significantly larger. And that's the case for pretty much any Frankie Edgar fight, whether he's at 145 or 155. But I mean, obviously, you know, a hugely important fight for Edgar. He loses this one, the hope of that, you know, maybe a third Jose Aldo fight, a Conor McGregor fight, that goes away for, you know, a while. He's not a spring chicken either. I think he's 35 now. All this fight time, it's coming down to the edge here. I don't think he has lost a few in a row when he dropped the two title fights and then lost to Aldo. So he's had a losing streak before, and he's come back from it, but he's never lost, I don't think, a non-title fight in like these situations. So, for him, hugely important fight. And for Jeremy Stevens, obviously, a big opportunity to get through there and really solidify himself as a top contender.
Danny, what do you think?
I'd mostly echo what Mike said. I think he said it pretty articulately. All evidence suggests that Frankie Edgar is the better fighter at this point in his career. We love these guys with the knockout power, and Jeremy Stephens has it. I've also, outside of Anthony Johnson, who I'm never betting against again, I generally am going to argue for the guy who I think is the better fighter.
Right.
And I think Frankie Edgar, he's fought guys with knockout power, and it's great. I will say Jeremy Stephens' weirdest moment I've had all week, and it's been a weird week. I asked him about the incident with Connor where he clearly shouldn't have, gotten involved.
So really? You don't think so? I think that was a brilliant move by him. It blew up in his face. He got, slightly humiliated. That clip played everywhere. Maybe to a lot of people it was, who the fuck is that guy? But now a lot of people know who he was. They, became aware that clip kind of went viral, that whole idea. So even though it kind of backfired on him, it benefited him in a way because it put him on the radar.
And I guess
someone
who was not in any way in the public spotlight, just that level of embarrassment, mortifies me. I would wake up every morning thinking about it. But I asked him about it, and I was like, he gave me a pretty canned answer. And I was like, does Connor know who you are? And he was like, I swear to God, he said his mom knows who I am, and then paused.
Which
and
sounds I, such like a,
oh, his mom knows who I am.
And I thought to myself, I was like, that's the worst mom joke. Like, what the hell are you doing? You're a grown man making a mom joke. And he was like, oh, no. I actually, at the last event,
met
got a photo
mom.
With Connor's mom and dad and, had a great conversation. We've kept in touch. And they know
touch?
Who I am. That's what he said. It floored me, so I had no follow-up question. But I really assumed that he was making a mom joke, and apparently he wasn't. He was just saying the weirdest thing I could think of.
That's so awesome. Your mom knows who I am. All right, let's talk about Nurmagomedov and Michael Johnson. Mike, you had a chance to speak to Nurmagomedov this week. I know that it's interesting because I actually tried to interview him a couple weeks back when everything was kind of blunt, and I was told that he doesn't want to talk to MMA Junkie. And basically I was told that we had not done enough in his view to help push him as the number one contender. I like Khabib a lot, and I would have liked to talk to him. I don't think it's my job to establish
campaign
him as
on
the
his
number
behalf.
One. Yeah,
yes.
Not my job. In fact, the whole reason I want to interview you is so that you can have your own campaign.
Yes,
because that's your job, not my job.
Exactly.
But you talked to him this week, right? And he was obviously not.
He's a little feisty.
Pro. Yeah, he's not taking anything personal. He's not like FU MMA junkie.
Yeah,
but he
felt the same way about MMA fighting. He felt they did. Basically, us two, the biggest two outlets in terms of strictly MMA media.
No,
we,
not sure what
you know,
that is.
Yeah, right. But he felt the same way. So yes, he's. He was not particularly excited, but he gave us the time of day.
Right.
Talked to us a bit about it. He feels he deserves the title shot for this one. 24-0, pretty difficult to argue with. An incredible winning streak he's had. But what do you really expect? He has had one fight in more than 2 years at this point.
It's
really difficult.
Man.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Do
we have to wait and see what happens? Because to me right now, God bless you, man. It's not your fault, Khabib. It's not your fault. But Tony Ferguson has won 9 fights in a row. A historical winning streak in the UFC's lightweight division. To me, that guy's the number one contender.
I believe that Khabib Nurmagomedov is the best lightweight in the world. I also don't believe he should get the title shot. He has fought one time since April 2014, and it was against Daryl Horcher.
Yep.
Who I don't know who
he is. Who the fuck is that guy?
Exactly. Who the fuck is that guy? It's okay to say he's the best, and
right.
Also, title shots should be earned. And Tony Ferguson has been fighting tough dudes month in, month out.
Right.
The entire time that he's been gone. The title shots, I don't understand what the UFC thinks about, who they give or whatnot. I imagine if Conor wins, Tony gets it anyways because it's an easier fight for him.
Right.
But no, of course the media doesn't have a responsibility to push Khabib.
And
genuinely believe he is the best lightweight in the world, but also he, through no fault of his own, hasn't stayed healthy.
I agree.
And I believe that rewarding the guys who do fight on a schedule that I consider to be acceptable, which is 3 times a year, should be in front of the guys who fight one time in 3 years.
And to double down on that point, and I completely agree, I've been beating the Khabib Chub for a very long time, considering him the best. Yeah, I felt that since I saw him pretty much day one in the UFC, that he was a very special talent.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, us kind of helping him keep his spotlight, keep his position, how many times in that 2 years when he wasn't fighting did they have him in studio to co-host an episode of MMA Junkie Radio? How many times did we reach out and do interviews with him then? We did a lot to keep him in, you know, the headlines, do some, even if it was every 6 weeks, couple months during that time off. We did a lot to kind of help him out there. So the fact that I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but still, like, I think his outlook on it is a little jaded, and I understand. You know, he's been chasing this title shot for a long time. He's been doing as much as he can, but he was just in a situation he didn't fight forever, and it was it really set him back. He could be the champion with multiple defenses by now if he didn't get hurt.
I agree. I think it should be Tony Ferguson. I do want to, you know, it's kind of funny because Tony Ferguson last week in Mexico really wasn't going out of his way to say that he was the number one contender. You know, he's kind of saying quite the opposite. In fact, I wonder, do you think anything at all has it to be that him and Connor are both Adiatar guys? Like, do you think is there anything to that maybe Adi was like, hey, Tony, maybe we don't need to go after the lightweight title if Connor wins it. Maybe we can find something else for you.
It's hard to say because, like, you look at the other side of it. You have Michael Bisping and Chris Weidman, who are under the same management umbrella as well. And Michael Bisping is there. We spoke to him today. He's saying, I want to fight Chris Weidman. Like, he's the guy I want to fight most. Yeah. So, I don't. If anything, that would be a good thing for them, right?
Right.
For Audi, regardless of what happens, one of his clients is still the lightweight champion.
True.
So it seems like that. I would rather have that than, you know, him fighting another guy from a different thing. If I'm the manager,
sure, at least you know it's under your banner. Yeah, I was curious. I just wondered. I saw Audi. I should have just asked him, but it didn't wander in the back of my head. I'm like, I wonder if he's like, hey guys, why don't we play this a little different, Tony? We can bring you up to 170, or hey, Connor, drop that 145 belt. And Tony, like, dropped that weird bond. He's like, I could go to 145 like last week, and I was like, what? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I just wondered if maybe that played into it at all.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's tough to say. Like I said, I think if you're a manager, at least from my perspective, it benefits you. You have one of your clients as being the guy regardless. And for Tony Ferguson, I think, and he's kind of said as much, this has been his deal all along. He's been a guy that has, you know, not – he wants to earn his way. He doesn't want to talk his way into the title shot. And he'll say some things here and there. He'll spit some fire in interviews. But he's hasn't really been that guy the entire time, since even when he was on The Ultimate Fighter.
So with absolutely no evidence, like, yes, I think that you are right in your assertion. I have nothing to back that up. But That's
what we do as reporters. We just guess. Yeah. We just go with it. All right. The last two fights on the Fox prelims are Tim Boach and Rafael Natal, Vicente Luque, which we know how you feel about Vicente Luque, Mike, against Bilal Muhammad. Either one of those fights stand out to you, or did you talk to anybody this week, or is it, you know, one person you're looking forward to seeing? Anything stand out about those two?
I mean, at this point, Rafael Natal is like as close as it gets to a New Yorker as this card has, outside of Chris Weidman. Like, he is. You know, he's been living here a long time, obviously Brazilian, but I think he's lived in New York 8 years or so now. You know, trains at Henzo Gracie's.
Was he talking about, like, maybe warming up at Henzo's and then just, like, and then just jogging over?
So stuff like that, yeah. I'm curious to see the reaction for him. Like, I'm sure when he's announced by Bruce Buffer as fighting out of New York, like, blah, 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 but coming out to the cage, like, is anyone going to be cheering him because they know he's, like,
chance of
a New Yorker, right?
Yeah.
Like, more or less. I don't know. So those two fights, obviously we had a change up there on the prelim card, mixed up a little bit, and we lost Rashad Evans and Tim Kennedy, which would have been on that card as well. So
that would have been a big fight.
Yeah, that would have been a big fight as well. We'll get it. You know, us and Daniel will get that in Canada next month.
Right.
So good times there. But
Christ,
yeah,
can we just address that picture of Rashad Evans, though, by the way?
Oh, my Lord. How does he even? He was 195 in that photo, apparently. I don't know how he was planning on losing another 9 pounds off that frame.
Scary looking dude at 185 pounds, man. Like a whole different human being.
Yeah, your muscles, I mean, how many of those muscles can't help your chin at this point? And I think that's coming down to what Rashad's issue is at this stage of his career. So I wonder.
Do any of us have any idea what the medical issue is?
No, I haven't heard.
I think he did an interview where he somewhat explained it. He said it's been a career-long thing that he's dealt with, but he said essentially he's never going to be able to fight in New York because of it.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, so he did a short interview. I apologize. I forget which outlet it was for.
How could you say you're never going to fight in New York, but you think you can fight in other places? I mean, I don't know. Maybe they have different kinds of standards or something. I'm not sure. All right, why are they trying to tap us out here? Do we have to leave? Are we getting cut off?
I don't think so.
Do we have to go? Are we leaving? Why are they bringing a check? Oh, okay. All right. Well, keep all ours together.
I will say, you're talking to two Canadian guys.
That's how we do it on the road show. We just get our bills during the middle
of
it.
We may be editing this out. We may not.
No.
I will say that the fact that that fight's getting appears to be getting added to the UFC 206 card.
Yeah, it's confirmed.
Yeah, that's okay. It's confirmed. So yep. I was not hoping that Rashad had serious health issues. I was hoping that they were going to do Jacare and Tim Kennedy on 206. I thought that really made sense.
Yeah.
But 206 is such an awful card. Whatever people tell you, it's fucking terrible. That it's as a Canadian who, cares about the Toronto market because I'm born and raised there. I like that. That's realistically the third fight on the card.
Yeah,
it's going from preliminary in New York to number three.
The featured bout,
in Toronto, and that's a positive. And
for them, but I guess it does kind of like put it into perspective that it's going from a prelim to.
But you could also say that's how stacked this card is.
Yeah,
true. And to answer, your point earlier, he can't fight in New York, but apparently can fight elsewhere. We're also talking about the Toronto Commission, which more or less allowed Vitor Belfort to fight John Jones on steroids.
Sure.
So I think they have a bit of a history.
An enterprising Canadian reporter will find out what the hell happened. And,
it's also weird because, to be fair, only the 10 million people who live in Ontario are going to understand this. But Ontario, I live in Alberta. I live in Western Canada. We are like the conservative homeland. Nothing is regulated.
Right.
Ontario is where I grew up, but it is the most regulated. You can't buy liquor if you're not in a government store.
Somehow
Ontario is more chill on health rules for
potential
fighters than New York.
Or something.
Something like New York must have really, really, really strict rules. I don't know what they are, and I hope that we find out what it was with Rashad.
I hope it's not something serious. Hopefully it's something.
It couldn't be that serious if he's fighting again and still fighting in 4 weeks. But
that's true, because the UFC wouldn't sign off on if it was something that they
and
were concerned
about. We'll get an answer. We'll talk to him at the media day or whatever it is. And he might not go into specific detail, but from the brief blurb that I saw, again, I apologize. I can't remember which outlet it was on. I could try to look it up later. But I saw, he said it's something that he's dealt with his entire career.
That's interesting. So. All right, the Fight Pass prelims, Thiago Alves versus Jim Miller. Liz Carr moves versus Kaitlyn Trakagian. Thiago Alves and Jim
good
Miller.
Fights. I really like those
two
fights.
Two good fights for sure. Thiago Alves and Jim Miller I'm finding especially intriguing just because Thiago, making the move down to 155 pounds. Crazy when you think about, he used to struggle to make weight at welterweight. You guys had a chance to see him up close and personal. I don't know exactly where he was at the moment. I know he was kind of being
coy.
A little bit coy about where he had to go. But what did you guys think about seeing Thiago this week?
Yeah, I wonder about – I didn't have – because we split up the room on media day. I was assigned to have the chance to speak with him. But I know he stopped working with Mike Dolce midway through camp. Decided to go with Perfecting Athletes, who is someone that's, a company that's working with a lot of people.
Right.
Ioannion Jacek is doing them. A lot of ATT fighters have, joined with that group of, nutrition plans. So it seems like he's well on his way, but what time is it right now? It's, just 1:04 a.m. local time.
Yep.
He will be getting on the scale within the next
eight
8 to 10 hours.
Yeah.
So that's going to be one of the more interesting storylines at the weigh-ins. I'm curious to see, how Connor looks at 155, stuff like that. But that's one that you definitely have to keep an eye on. And for Jim Miller, he's got the chance here to be the winningest lightweight ever in UFC history. He's tied with Gleison Tebow right now, 16 wins apiece. So for him, that's something that, he has a chance
that's
to make
cool.
a little bit of history here. So, and for Jim Miller, fought at UFC 100, fought at UFC 200, now fighting at UFC 205. That's a guy that is, getting a lot of memories for his memory bank and his career. And he's a guy that, too, we've talked about, the whole thing with his Lyme disease.
Yeah.
He's really bounced back. He's looked unbelievable in his past couple fights, beating Takanori Gomi at 200 and then Joe Lozon in Vancouver. A busy year for him, but if he can kind of keep this going through the end of the year, that's big stuff for Jim Miller. He's kind of relevant again in that flirting with entering back in the top 15 of that division. So good for him, and always look forward to watching him fight because he's always been an exciting guy.
Yep, I like both those fights on Fight Pass. It should be a fun card. As you said, we're about 8 hours away from weigh-ins. Of course, we'll be at the official weigh-ins like we always are. We'll see if we have the drama that we had in Mexico City. That was kind of an interesting week.
Or at UFC 200 or any of those things. I mean, UFC 200 was by far the most dramatic one. I've been with Miesha Tate coming in at the buzzer.
Yeah.
I'm curious how Miesha Tate looks, too. She struggled bad the last one. Kelvin Gastelum is another person that's had weight issues. He missed weight at 200. He almost missed weight. Hendricks missed weight, but... Yeah, there's some interesting storylines here for this weigh-in coming up.
If I can quickly say that, I just pulled up Jim Miller's, his record. The guys he has lost to, I mean, Diego Sanchez is not a great loss. Outside of that, I mean, he lost to Chiesa, who I genuinely think is a stud.
Yep.
And he is. Lost to Dariush, who
stud.
Is a stud. He lost to Cerrone. Outside of that, he's mostly won all of his fights.
Crazy, right?
Over the last couple of years. I kind of went there.
It kind of felt like he was getting written off, right? For a while,
yeah.
Like people were like, I think Jim's just about done.
He has lost to top 10 guys other than Diego, who I respect Diego all that.
Of course.
That's not a great loss. That looks like a guy. You lose to Diego at the point that Jim is at in his career, and it looks like you're a guy on the out. I probably should have done this a week ago when I was preparing to come to New York, but that really impressed me. I mean,
There's a lot of fights to prepare for, bro. It's tough.
Yeah. So, I mean, that fight's better than until 10 seconds ago than I thought it was. And
So, sleeper card on Danny's watch list now. He's like, man, I'm really looking forward to this one.
Well, I mean, I love Jim Miller. I've always loved him. But that was a fight that I was treating on a card, as I said earlier. What I love about this versus UFC 200 is that it's relevant, competitive fighters at the top of their weight classes. And I was interpreting that fight as being one of the ones that was like, hey, we've got good, reliable, exciting fighters, but they're not really contenders.
Right.
And Jim Miller might not be a contender, but he's fighting guys who are on the verge of being contenders at the very least. So,
no doubt about it.
No disrespect to Miller either. I love this fight too. I did like the Iaquinta Alves fight a little more. I would have loved to see Al Iaquinta on this card. It's a shame what his situation is right now, that he's more or less being forced into retirement because he can't get the money he feels he's worth contract-wise. But
is that being forced into retirement by not honoring a contract you already had?
Sure. A pre Reebok contract, fairly.
True.
But yes, that I like that fight. But hopefully, Al can get back in there at some point. But Jim Miller, as good of as a replacement as you could possibly find for the spot. So good on the UFC for getting that done at least.
Well, Danny, you're always good at asking people weirdly uncomfortable questions. Anybody else make a nice impact on you this week? Did anybody register with you?
To be fair, I mean there were two. The main one, and actually Mike was there, and I asked Weidman about Bisping saying that Romero should not get a title shot if he wins, and this has led into we had lunch with Stipe Miocic, but I have been a little bit troubled.
Just dropping names like that. Just dropping names.
I gotta drop some names. Gotta establish my credibility as a. But no, I mean, I've been a little bit troubled because I think that there are so many issues with USADA, but I genuinely believe that having a robust drug testing system is important for the sport.
I agree.
And I won't back down on that. But this tainted supplement thing has clearly become something where, particularly for fighters with resources to establish a legal defense, it feels like they might be able to get around the issue. So I asked Weidman about it. And, I mean, Mike, I found it fascinating. Weidman literally was like, this is bullshit.
Yep.
There are guys who are, you can take a performance-enhancing drug and then find the supplement in advance before you start taking it and make sure that that's lined up so that your lawyers can deal with it. And, I mean, he genuinely, and we didn't get into the money, but I imagine this is more a thing where fighters who are making 50 grand a fight might be able to do it, but he did not back down.
Nope.
And
I saw that video, man. It's on MMA Junkie if people want to watch it, or be on in the morning.
Yeah, it's up. It's on the site. It's the featured post on the site right now.
Yeah.
But it was, for me, it was refreshing to see a fighter talk about it. And then we talked to Stipe today, and Stipe laid out the fact that every supplement he buys, He is keeping samples. He calls Jeff Nowitzki from USADA. And, you know, he's checking in on all of it. And as you and I walked afterwards, this is I'm relaying a conversation we had earlier. We were like, it feels like if you were a professional athlete making professional athlete money, the least that you can do is what Stipe described, which is keep a sample of every supplement you take. If you're not sure, call the bosses. And
seems like a simple request.
It seems like a really simple request. And for all of the talk recently about how, like, maybe USADA is overreaching and all of that, what Stipe described was completely acceptable. And I understand Chris Weidman's argument. And I want to ask more people about Mark Hunt. I didn't get the chance to do it. I think Mark Hunt's anger is fully justified. And when I asked Weidman about Mark Hunt, he was like, a big chunk of the money that a fighter gets paid, if they test positive and they beat you, one loss can ruin your career, and you need to get their prize money. So I found that really interesting. So yeah.
Speaking of Mark Hunt, it's a shame we didn't get him versus JDS in Toronto. That would have been nice for that card too, because that was offered. But he is, keeping his stance. He's not.
They tried, man. They tried. They tried that. They wanted it. They wanted Ronda. You can go pee if you want to.
I gotta go to the washroom. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I've been holding in some.
But yeah, funny. So
they tried, man. They tried to get the half fight on there. They tried to put Ronda was one of their original targets. They wanted to be on that card. So I feel bad for you guys in Toronto. But
I mean, a lot of
I'm not making the trip.
Yeah, I mean, the card, like, outside of, you know, the top four, pretty much, you know, there's some good ones. Cub Swanson, Duhu Choi.
Oh, that's a great one.
You know, now that we have Rashad Kennedy, of course, you know, Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis is a ridiculously sick
fight.
And then, you know, Cormier and Rumble, that's a great rematch for the title. That's high quality. It's just a shame that it's being plugged in between these two epically massive cards, 205 with Conor and Alvarez, and then obviously 207 with Ronda Rousey. It's unfortunate for that, you know, that market, that the timing there. But what are you going to do? I mean, I understand it's a little bit easier for me to take it because I'm a media. I don't have to buy tickets. I don't
That's
have to
true.
Buy the pay-per-view. Yeah. So I understand maybe some other people's frustration, but it's just sometimes these things always don't work out. And Canada, it seems, just more often than not gets like the short end of the stick with these cards.
It does seem like it's just awful, like horrible luck.
Yeah, and like, look, you go back in some of these cards, just like the last few pay-per-views they've done, they did, you know, 174, which was Demetrius Johnson and Bagatinov, was right before the Weidman UFC 175, yep, which was a big card as well. And like UFC 186 in Montreal with Johnson and Horiguchi was right before 187, which had two title fights on. It's just like, it seems like they've just had bad luck. And but for the people saying that I've given up on the Canadian market, all that stuff, and I know right now it probably doesn't make the most sense in the world for the UFC to go there too much, just because the exchange rate
right.
and all that stuff.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
they're probably not making. And we saw
it
if you want to go read the amazing work our Ben Folks and Stephen Morocco did with those UFC investor documents and that presentation.
It
more or less details how Canada was the mecca for MMA for a portion there, and then Brazil took it over, and it kind of says all these things. Just
yep.
financially, it's not a big moneymaker for the UFC right now. But the fact they even come back, they're having a show within the first 2 months of 2017 in Halifax. They are still staying faithful to that market with at least 2-3 fight cards a year. And what more do you really want outside of the United States? That's just as much or more than any other market, probably besides Brazil,
yep.
is getting in terms of fight cards. Yes, they're not the most amazing fight cards all the time, but, you know, what are you going to do? At least I'm curious to see what they do for that Halifax show, though, with Rory McDonald.
Be interesting.
Very curious.
Danny, everything working out okay in the bathroom?
I'm coming back. I'm hearing that you guys are talking about 207.
Did you wash your hand? Did you wash your hand?
I washed them a little bit. I could have done better. If I'm offered the opportunity to talk about 206, I have said this on Twitter.
The floor is yours, my friend.
When they realized that the major fights that they were trying to get weren't happening, they should have canceled the Albany card. There are so many fights on that Albany card that you could have added. You could have added Derek Lewis. You could have added Francis Ngannou. I am 100% in agreement.
Sterling.
I want to rage about what has happened to the Canadian market. But I also know that in Montreal, originally TJ Dillashaw was supposed to fight Henan Barao, which was, for me at least, a pretty big fight.
Right.
That card, if you add that, if you add Rory McDonald and Hector Lombard, which was originally scheduled, was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Things happened. I live in Calgary. You can go back to the Calgary card and be like,
my first UFC event I was credentialed for.
The worst UFC event in history. This Toronto card, it is, I think it is fair to say that it's unacceptable that outside of Toronto and New York, the biggest, you know, metropolis in North America, is getting its first card in a couple years, and the card is shit. It is, I don't care about Valerie Letourneau. She's a great fighter. She's fun. But that is not a number three fight on a pay-per-view.
Well, the thing is, too, that about these Canadian cards is they recycle the same six or so Canadian fighters.
Well, it's kind of like the European fighters, the Brazilian fighters, and the fans eventually go, like, I don't want to see them anymore. I've already seen them. I want to see
something different.
Bring me some Americans. Bring me some Europeans.
Misha Serkinov and Nikita Krylov is a dope fight.
But the fact,
but you're right, though. If you cherry pick that card, like if we were to take those two cards, you know, Toronto and Albany, and be like, I want these five from here and these five from here and put it together, you'd have a damn fine
card. If you're
card.
Not from Southern Ontario or Northwest New York, you may not realize that, like, Albany and Toronto are, what, 3 hours away from each other? I mean, if the border's good. Like, they are not far. And I've told reporters, I've been like, oh, no, go to Toronto even if the card sucks, just because you can go to Albany on the Friday night as well. And then literally wake up at 11, leave at 12, and you'll be back in time for the fight card. Like,
that's crazy.
You can do it.
Yeah, and
just go to both cards.
Last point on this, and we can move on to, you know, what is obviously important right now. UFC 205. Frosty beverages and UFC 205. Yes, but
I'm done talking. I just want to start drinking.
I just wonder with that event starting this week and even going back to last week, we have an event every single weekend leading up to that card. We have an event the night before that Toronto card. If you are, you know, a hardcore fan, whatever, even just a casual fan, and you're watching all these events, when that December 10th arrives and it's that Saturday night and you already spent your Friday night in watching an event, how compelled are you going to be to put down $60 for that pay-per-view? It's going to be a tough sell. And I feel bad for Daniel Cormier because he's like, you know, he's going to get the short end of the stick in terms of a pay-per-view, you know, buy rate and money. Obviously, he has pay-per-view points, all that kind of stuff. So it's a shame for him. And they tried GSP, all these things, Ronda Rousey. We had options. But, yeah, I just wonder once that – and they could have just had such an incredible opportunity to do possibly a million-plus pay-per-view events to close out the year with 205, 206, 207. They dropped the ball on 206. It's unfortunate, but – what are you going
to
do?
And I follow Mike. Like, Mike is similar to me, does not only the UFC, do other sports. Toronto has shown that it is a real-deal sports city
over
the last couple years.
They've done amazing things this year.
Yeah, and, like, the Raptors are an Eastern Conference final. Like, this is an active, engaged sports city. And I think it's a mistake to go back with anything less than a stellar card. I mean, that is, what, 7 million people if you include the whole area? Like, it's a big city that has good sports and will reject the UFC product if it's not good.
And we're, you know, very, very last thing, we're one Daniel Cormier or Anthony Johnson injury away from that card being canceled, more or less, you know?
You're right.
They are very much riding a very thin line there.
I asked you this last night. I'm not trying to take over the podcast. Let's say Cormier gets hurt. That's not a pay-per-view anymore, right?
Nah.
You have to cancel it as a pay-per-view.
Or just move it, move it to FS1, whatever the case may be. And there's only so many times they can do this. And this is the problem with, and it doesn't look like they're slowing down into 2017. The UFC is doing more and more cards.
That's right. This is you idiots, they're doing more.
But this is the issue with what they're doing. Like, how many in the first 20 years of the UFC's existence, they didn't have to cancel one card? Within the past 4 years, they've canceled, what, four at this point? Or, like, adjusted it to that point, you know, with one.
I wonder how many tickets they sold in Albany. I haven't heard. You know, ended up being, like, really funny. Now, I think that's part of the deal, because remember, when they came here, they promised, you know, get New York done, we'll do three this year, and we'll do more, blah, blah, blah. And so they probably owe the Athletic Commission money, but I bet, you know, they promised revenue. But I wonder how many tickets they sold, because if they haven't sold that many tickets, I mean, rather than canceling 206 or canceling pay, it would be kind of easier to just be like, let's say Johnson or Cormier did get hurt, that you're just like, okay, we're not doing Albany now, but we just moved like six of these fights to here. I don't know.
Well, you have to wonder too, like, on top of ticket sales, we don't know about that. with this New York market, the insurance policy they have to pay. They have to pay how many thousand? I think it's $5,000 per fighter, and then the $1 million.
I think it's even more than that.
Something like that. Yeah. It's some crazy number, and then of course the big $1 million one for a brain damage, all that kind of stuff.
I want to say like Brad Okamoto did it, and it was like. It was like 8 or 10. Yeah, grand
it was either him or Mark Rivandi who did some good stories, reporting what's going on with the New York Commission. But that you have to wonder between it being a Fight Pass show, what ticket sales are like how much money are they really making on that Albany show? Is it any money at all? I'd be super curious to know.
But that being said, I mean, and the question I would ask, if all of us somehow lost our jobs, God forbid, but you for some reason got a ticket to one or the other show, and you had to pick. As a guy who knows what you guys know about the sport, not as a casual fan.
Well, dude, we were having
the Albany card is more fun.
We were having a discussion.
It's a better card
because we were looking at. I'm not going to either one of them, but we were looking at maybe shuffling some things on the schedule. And I was like, if I'm going anywhere, I want to go to Albany. You know what I mean? I'm just like, sorry, I'd rather go to Albany.
It's such a fun card. I mean, like you got Asim Sal, like.
Yeah, and Sterling. That's a great fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some good fights on there, but it's a lot of fights coming up to close the year. But you just wonder why. They do that on the night before pay-per-view. I just wonder how incentivized you are to spend your Friday and Saturday night. I mean, we're going to be doing it because it's our jobs, of course. But
I'm incentivized because I have nothing else to do with my life.
This is true. And
apparently,
me too.
Weekend sucks. I'm not doing anything.
I'm a dud, but it's okay. I mean, bring it home, John. Let's get it. Let's wrap. This is making me sad.
Sorry,
bring it home.
Getting depressed.
Let's go back to 205 and close out on this. Let's focus on the. Let's be like Conor McGregor and not worry about what happens after Saturday night.
Don't worry about that. I've got a big announcement to make. All right. Yeah, let's do that. Let's pour our tears out and let's just refill some frosty beverages and get hype about 205. And we got early weigh-ins in like a couple of hours, so. Maybe we'll just pull an all-nighter and just roll in hot. Everybody good with that?
The great thing about tomorrow is that, like, there's nothing to do media-wise.
God, I miss the days when we used to get to sleep in, though. I love the early weigh-ins because it's, like, interesting and it's intimate and there's been drama. Jesus Christ, we used to get to sleep on Fridays. I think I might have to move this podcast to a different night. All right.
For the record, I shut up half an hour late to our launch with Stipe Miocic. I slept in today.
Bastard. All right, let's reopen the press pages. Always a pleasure, Danny Austin. Thank you for stopping by. Always a pleasure to see you. And, of course, the young Mike Bond. Always a pleasure to have you on as well. We're going to go get some cocktails. So let me just say to everybody, thanks for listening.